Our next presenter will be talking about the analysis of spirometry benefits in children with asthma using propensity score matching. He's from the Centers for Disease Control. And rather than mispronounce your name, I'll let you introduce yourself further. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Tursunbek Nurmagomedov, and I am from CDC, National Center for Environmental Health, and I'm working at the Air Pollution and Respiratory Health Branch, which actually, you know, where this study was done, and with my colleague, Prevention Effectiveness Fellow Shubhayu Saha. And so the title is Analysis of Spirometry Benefits in Children with Asthma Using Propensity Score Matching. I'd like to say first that I am not a physician, I'm not a therapist, so I'm an economist. And also, when you see that analysis of spirometry benefits, I'd like to say that we're not going to get into actually evaluating the results of spirometry, but rather just the fact whether the child has spirometry or not, and I'm going to talk about that more in details. So as most of you probably know, asthma is one of the prevalent and costly chronic diseases in the U.S. and the most prevalent chronic disease among children, as previous speakers already told about that. And it causes recurrent episodes of breathing, breathlessness, chest tightness, and nighttime or early morning coughing. The burden of asthma, the prevalence of current asthma in the U.S. is in 2007 was 9.1 percent for children and 7.3% for adults. The total medical expenditure, total cost associated with asthma was over $56 billion. This is the last numbers, and probably that would be the numbers that would be more or less we will refer to, because it's the results of just finished study and the total cost of asthma, and will be published in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. So about spirometry, as you all know, spirometry test is used to diagnose and keep track of asthma severity diagnosis in and it's recommended for children of age of 5 and older, because if they say that if child is younger, then it's probably that child will not be able to perform spirometry test properly. So it measures how quickly a child can move air in and out of the lungs, and how much air is moved in per second, or per some, or just in general. National Asthma Education and Prevention Program, EPR3, guidelines recommend spirometry testing for all children, starting on age 5 and older. However, this test, spirometry test, is underused by clinicians, with less than 2/3 of practitioners reporting the use of spirometry in the previous year. And you can see that the very last, one of the papers was published in 2000, and another was published in 2010 in Pediatrics, where they actually support this, that the spirometry is actually underused, even though it was recommended by NAPP EPR3 guidelines. So the objective of this study was to assess the rates of emergency department visit and or hospitalizations for children in the employer-based insured population using propensity score matching. And about propensity score matching, I will tell later. It's just a method to make sure that the the result of the study is not biased, but basically the objective is to check if the child has spirometriasis, just the fact that the child has spirometriasis, if that has any effect on the number of hospitalization or ER visits because of asthma, because of asthma. So we also use the market scan data that we have. It's basically employer-based population insurance claim data. We used for the year 2006 through 2008, which is 2008 is the most recent data. We identified a cohort of 32,248 children with asthma who were 5 years and older and younger than 18 years old in 2008, and who continuously enrolled in one healthcare plan over the 1 year, during the 1 year. We use HEDIS definition for persistent asthma, which is a child has asthma if one of the four conditions is happening during 1 year. Either the child has one hospitalization with primary diagnosis of asthma, or the child has one ER visit with primary diagnosis of asthma, or the child has four prescription medication for asthma, or had four outpatients visit with either the primary or secondary diagnosis of asthma and two prescription medication for asthma. And that's it's called HEDIS definition for persistent asthma. And that's the case definition of asthma that we use in this population. And as normally we do, we excluded COPD, emphysema. Sometimes emphysema is a part of COPD, and cystic fibrosis diagnosis were excluded from the study. So if the child has spirometry, and all these children who had spirometry, this cohort study were identified as a treatment group. So the idea here is that an idea of, first of all, let me start with a problem. The problem is when you study retrospective data, especially, you're trying to compare, say, the children with spirometry versus children without spirometry, then it might be a problem because it's not a randomized controlled trial. So you're not randomly putting a child one group versus another group. That's not going to happen. If that's not going to happen, then there might be some serious factors can actually affect that choice of the having spirometry. It's not only having spirometry, but about any other about a lot of interventions. For example, having influenza vaccination, having controller medication, or any of other things that you can think of as a treatment effect. And so for this spirometry, we identified treatment group as those children who had spirometry in 2006 and 2007. So the third year, 2008, we left as to measure the outcome of that interventions. And by intervention, we simply identifying as those who had spirometry. That's an intervention, that is a treatment group. Non-treatment population is those who didn't have any spirometry in those 2 years. So in this cohort, 30% of the sample were in the treatment group. So basically 30% of children with persistent asthma, they had spirometry in either 2006 or 2007. They might have more than two, but at least they have at least once. And we assume that since they had spirometry, they probably their diagnosis probably identified more properly. Maybe they were prescribed better asthma action plan. Maybe they had better management of asthma. That was our hypothesis. And so we use propensity score matching. methods to control for selection bias. So in other words, we think that if a child or parents or child happen to be have a spirometry, maybe there is something else that actually affect that choice. Maybe it was because of education, maybe because of education of parents, maybe because of behavior, general behavior pattern of the family, of the child, or et cetera. So which we don't observe because it's not among those observable variables in market scan. Actually, I have to say that market scan, even though it's very good in terms of payment, in terms of the insurance status and type of insurance, and in terms of ICD-9 codes and services, it's very good data, but unfortunately, it's not very good data in terms of, for example, it doesn't have race, it doesn't have education, income, all those variables, all those observations are missing, so which may have some effect on this choice of having spirometry. And so the idea was this, and I'm just making a very short introduction to propensity scoring methods, is you have treatment group as those children with asthma who had spirometry in 2007, and then for every child from that group, you identifying a child in the those who didn't have spirometry, and using, there are different matching methods, so we just choose to have these four matching methods. And so for every child, you choose a child who didn't have spirometry, but trying to make it as close to this, the child from the treatment group as possible in terms of probability of having spirometry. So in other words, even though this child in a treatment group and another child in control group, they both have very close observational variables and very close probability of having spirometry, but the child from the treatment group happened to have spirometry, but this child didn't have. That's what how the usually it's done for any treatment effect. So we use these four methods just to for every child we use either nearest neighbor with caliper to five nearest neighbors with caliper to local linear regressions and kernel matching with bandwidth 8. So these four strategies respectively create four control groups. So once that is done, then you basically can, it's called a simulation of randomized control trials. Now this treatment group and this control group can be more or less treated similarly to the control and as is a randomized control trial. So the the outcomes was, again, I'm reminding that there was the rates of hospitalizations or ED visits in 2008. And here's what we have. So this is just summary, unadjusted statistics. You have spirometry group and non-spirometry group. And here at the very bottom, you have the actual number of those people, and total is the sample size. So pretty much there is no that big difference between two groups. You see that there is a mean is, age mean is close. The gender distribution, the distribution by living in urban versus rural and living in different regions of the United States, being enrolled in HMO versus PPO plan. But when you go to actually the asthma variables, asthma outcome, then you can see the difference. This difference, by the way, all of them significant. So for example, the number of ED or hospitalizations, we just think them as one unit. In 2006 and 2007 was 0.015 and spirometry 0.124. And then for the same outcome in 2008, was 0.63 versus 0.58. So in other words, all of these outcomes are higher in spirometry versus non-spirometry. And the second is the number of prescription medication for controllers, for relievers, also higher in the spirometry group versus children who didn't have spirometry. The outpatient visits in 2008, physician visits in 2008, and specialist visits, all of them are higher in spirometry group. So it kind of makes you wonder why it's going on. There might be different factors, but might be something that we don't observe, something that makes this sort of like self-selection bias. So if we correct for that by using spirometry testing, then that all the results, they actually switched. So in this table, all these numbers in the first column and in the third column, these are rates of ED and hospitalizations. And now you can see that, and all these four rows is just different methods of matching. And you can see now, in the treatment group, you have 0.3. I missed zero. Hold on a minute. Let me go up. Just 1 second. You see, here you have 0.03, and in the next table I just missed that zero, so it's supposed to be zero there. So I'm sorry about that. It just, I don't know how it happened, but so instead of all these four numbers, they're missing zero after the dot. So, which means now that those who had treatment in treatment group, they actually have now lower rates of hospitalization or ER visits in 2008. So that output actually switched. And if we subtract from these numbers, the numbers in the second column, so that's it's called average treatment effect, which is now negative because the rates in the treatment group actually is lower. So those children who had spirometry had lower hospitalizations or ER visits in 2008. And that might be effect of having spirometry, better asthma management, et cetera. So we can speak about that, but let me just go ahead and just summarize that. After adjusting for selection bias using propensity scoring methods, children with spirometry tests have about 20% reduction in expected frequency of asthma attacks or ER visits. Or hospitalizations. Of course, there is some limitation because of claims data and maybe some other unobserved variables. We didn't account for that. And as a conclusion, we think that using propensity score matching corrects selection bias caused by possible association between spirometry tests and asthma severity. And results of this study suggest that benefits of spirometry evaluation can be actually beneficial, can actually imply reduction in ER visits or hospitalizations. And thank you for your attending this session in this late afternoon.
Thank you.
Yeah, the morning.